Welcome to the Iditarod, a podcast about what else? The Iditarod, a production of Alaska Public Media and KNOM Radio in Nome. I'm your host, Josh Edge. At long last, mushers have left Fairbanks and made it through the first checkpoint at Nenana and are continuing their long runs along interior Alaska rivers as they make their way toward the Burled Arch in Nome. But before we get in too deep, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, celebrating 40 years of fueling the 49th state, is proud to support Iditarod coverage on Alaska Public Media.
Iditarod teams are strung out all along the Tanana River, most of them between Nenana and Manly Hot Springs. The leaders will make it through Manly Hot Springs at some point this morning, with many of them likely pushing through toward the checkpoint of Tanana. And just a reminder, we are in the middle of producing our daily episodes, which we will keep on producing until the end of the race. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher or listen on alaskapublic.org. If you've listened to our earlier episodes, first off, thank you. And you will notice the episodes from here on out will sound a little different. That's because our trail reporters are, well, out on the trail, which means you're all stuck with me. I mean, I guess we will be hearing from Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and KNOM's Ben Matheson as they make their way down the trail. But now, let's get back to the race. Teams did make good time heading down the Chena and Tanana Rivers to Nenana. That's where Ben caught up with a few of them who took a breather at the checkpoint, like Richie Deal from Aniak.
That trail coming in was pretty soft. I mean, I was standing on drag the whole way here, but I mean, it was soft trail, so trying to keep them slow.
Monica Zappa was in agreement, and she says the soft snow kept things interesting for her team as well.
There were definitely holes. You know, sometimes your lead dogs would disappear out of sight. There's like a 3-foot hole they fell into.
Now, a lot of teams did opt to push through Nenana up toward Manly Hot Springs almost immediately, but after taking her team and race conditions into account, Ben says Iditarod veteran Didi Genro decided to stick with a little more conservative of a plan.
My thoughts are you better break that up. You know, if you have a really hard team that's raced, you could consider making that a 10-hour run. But I don't think that is the smartest for this group. 10 hours, that's a long time. In cold weather like this.
Temperatures were expected to drop down to like 30 below during that first night of the race. And we do already have one scratch, Otto Ballo of Budapest, Hungary. He would have been the first Hungarian musher to race in the Iditarod, but he scratched before leaving the starting line in Fairbanks, and he said due to personal health concerns. And now, if we have not talked about it enough in previous episodes, this is the second time in three races the Iditarod restart was held in Fairbanks. And some mushers have some pretty vivid memories of the last time the race started in Fairbanks back in 2015. Zach caught up with a few of them prior to leaving Fairbanks, and he says they're trying to pack accordingly.
It was chilly in Fairbanks, with overnight lows dipping towards 30 below. But by the time mushers were harnessing dogs and running through checklists, the clear weather was easing towards a balmy 0 degrees. Though not running the race this year, four-time winner Lance Mackey was on hand and says this year's serious winter in the interior may prove a strong factor to contend with.
The wind has been blowing all winter. It snows when least expected. And I think it's going to be, I've said many times, if these people haven't tried their snowshoes on, they're going to be hurting. Because I think this is a year that you might need them, even to get off the trail to camp.
Trailbreakers have been adding passing lanes to the early part of the route heading toward Tanana, where the snows have been the heaviest. Long stretches in the first leg of the race will require most mushers to stop between checkpoints, a break to feed and rest the dogs. All around the parking lot that's been converted to a dog yard, mushers are attaching bales of straw to their sleds, some on the baskets. Others, like veteran Pete Kaiser, were piling it into trailers hitched behind the sled.
This just gives a little extra room for some of these long runs between checkpoints where we're going to be stopping on the trail and camping, and requires you to haul a little more gear. So,
what will not be hauled in the trailer this year is dogs. A controversial rule change bars mushers from carrying dogs in trailers, throwing a wrench in many people's strategies from years past, which involved regularly rotating animals through rest to long runs. But many people are experimenting with a workaround, most notably returning champion Dallas Seavey.
And so without being able to carry dogs in trailers, we had to find a way to bridge that gap, so we just made a bigger sled.
CV is standing over what looks like the Batmobile of dog sleds. It's almost totally black, and instead of an external frame with a bag suspended from supports, this looks more like a plastic shell. It's about 10% bigger than a regular sled. He had it custom built from Kevlar and carbon fiber and mounted to the runners. Behind where the musher stands is another heavy-duty cube that could hold supplies or dogs. Because according to the rules, as long as it's safe and fixed to the structure of the primary sled, you can use it for animals.
There's many sleds here that have the ability to carry just as many dogs as I do in the same way. They just don't have hard sides. I like the hard sides because it helps protect the dogs so that, you know, if there's just a piece of fabric between them and the great big world, you know, it's a little less than a carbon fiber and Kevlar. You know, I've got them in a, you know, a little cocoon in there.
Hundreds of people took buses from the Carlson Center to view the event at Pike's Landing. Spectators lined the long chute, clapping as mushers rushed below celebratory arches, down onto the Chena River, and on toward Nome. In Fairbanks, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
I think those are two ways I've never actually heard sleds described, as both a cocoon and the Batmobile. Now, that story was produced for radio, and when we're putting together stories like that for broadcast, there's only so much tape and so many details we can include because we're dealing with a finite amount of time. In this podcast, we're not necessarily limited to that. So Zach sent along a couple longer interviews he recorded in the making of that story, like this one from Dallas CV.
So there's a couple things that are unique about it. One is that you know, it's kind of got an exoskeleton frame system. It's, instead of the internal structure that most sleds have with the stanchions that we're used to seeing in a sled bag, this thing has hard sides. And engineering-wise, it's a little bit tricky to get that figured out because you still have to retain flexibility and keep your runners flexing. So I feel like we did a pretty good job. I put a lot of miles on the sled, and it's worked great. So I'm excited to have it on the trail.
So there's no stanchions. The sides themselves are very
They have some internal structure built into them, but we omitted the entire stanchion and the entire sled bag and pretty much put a hard-sided sheeting on it. So it's all carbon fiber and Kevlar.
Is it, and inside, are there internal pockets or compartments for them to curl up in, or is it just a big, giant kind of bag space?
No, it's compartmentalized, and I can adjust that, but it's nice because it keeps their space open, and I was able to get the dogs a little more space in there, so not only are they not running, but they're able to get a good rest. You know, there's about 2 inches of camping pad and then straw on top of that, so they've got a comfy ride in there. For loading, too, because they're going in from the side rather than from the top. So,
with all your supplies and stuff, how many dogs now could you have in your sled resting?
That's a million-dollar question. It really doesn't matter how many dogs you can carry. I mean, theoretically, I could carry 15, but who has one dog strong enough to pull them? So it's not about how much space you have in your sled. It's about the dog team that's pulling that sled. So, we'll see.
Did you design this by yourself, or were you collaborating with somebody else and kind of and field testing it throughout the season?
It's definitely my brainchild. I worked with a lot of different people, everywhere from, you know, the welders at Peregrine Marine, you know, helped me make the form that we then made the carbon fiber. Carbon Concepts helped me actually make the carbon fiber, as that's something I'm not familiar with, but I had to be able to tell them, this is the shape I want, here is the piece that you're copying, make it out of carbon fiber. But they had some great ideas, knowing the materials better, so that was very beneficial.
We also heard from another four-time Iditarod champion, Lance Mackey. He's not going to run the race this year. He was originally planning on racing, but he pulled out back in September, citing some personal health reasons. But even though he's not going to be trekking along the trail to Nome this year, he was still at the starting line in Fairbanks, and he had some obviously valuable insight.
I'm just curious what you're watching for your dogs on your brother's team this year and how you're going to be keeping an eye on things.
Oh, I have dogs in a lot of teams here. I'm going to keep an eye on everybody, but I have no predictions. I have no expectations, but, undoubtedly I'm missing it. Hopefully I'll be at the end to see him come in, and, you know, we'll see how it goes from there. But I'm here to support all of them and just let my dogs know that I'm still part of, you know, I'm supporting them. It's the right thing to do for the dogs. You know, this ain't about me.
How are you, though, right now?
I could probably burst into tears instantly. And I ain't gonna lie, I have several times, just not in front of anybody. You know, this is my life, and something that I've occasionally been really good at. And, you know, I mean, obviously I can't change a lot of things, so I have to accept a lot of things. There goes the dog team by itself. And that in itself is something I haven't gotten used to. I haven't accepted the fact that I can't change the things that I'm not able to change, you know? So I have to accept them. And right at the moment, I'm still having a hard time accepting them because in my mind, I can do anything I want. And unfortunately, I can't, you know? So a lot of accepting. A lot of accepting.
A lot of yelling going on.
Yeah, Bernhalter.
Anything you're going to keep an eye on, or if you were me, you'd keep an eye on as far as weather and trail conditions in the next couple days?
Yeah, I wouldn't wait, you know, like to get ahead. The wind has been blowing all winter. It snows when least expected. And I think it's going to be, I've said many times, if these people haven't tried their snowshoes on, they're going to be hurting, because I think this is a year that you might need them, even to get off the trail to camp, you know? I live out not too far from here, and, you know, I took a snow machine out. I was gone for 15 minutes. I came back, couldn't even tell there was a snow machine over it, you know, and it was a nice day.
You can definitely tell Lance has a lot invested in this race, both physically, emotionally, and he literally has dogs in the race. Unfortunately, he's not going to be on the runners of the sled this year. And on the subject of dogs, we have been asking for some listener questions over the last few episodes, and it actually appears to be working. One listener sent us a very, very important question.
My name is Daisy, and I'm 6 years old, and my question is, what do the dogs do when they are running and they get tired?
When that question landed in my inbox, I forwarded it up to Ben and Zach to get their take on it, but Ben took it a step even further. He went straight to an expert, musher Catherine Keith, and played Daisy's question for her.
Well, when the dogs get running and they get tired, I can typically read that they're getting a little tired, and that's when I know I need to stop for a snack. So different dogs will have different cues. Some dogs will weave back and forth a little bit. Some dogs will just put their heads down, and that's when I give them a treat or a snack just to keep them going. I'll stop the team, pet them on their ears, and then pretty soon we stop to camp, and they get their nap, and they're ready to go again. So thanks for your question.
Again, that question did come from one of our listeners, and we have received a few so far, but we want even more. So if you have a question about the race, please send it our way. You can email them to iditarod@alaskapublic.org. But better yet, you can record yourself on a smartphone and email us. You can use a voice recorder or memo app. Almost all phones have these. Introduce yourself, tell us where you're from, and ask away. That is all the time we have for today. Big thanks to Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes and KNOM's Ben Matheson for all their hard work out on the trail. And again, we are in the midst of our daily episodes, so if you like what you hear, you can tune in every day during the race. And to make that a little bit easier, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher, or listen on alaskapublic.org. Our theme music is by the band Sassafras, and I'm Josh Edge. Goodbye.
I think it's going to be interesting. I don't think it's going to be as predictable as a lot of people are saying. And, you know, there's teams here that, there's teams here that I think are going to be surprising to a lot of people. The ones people aren't counting on or keeping an eye on. I think there's 70 teams in this race that you should keep an eye on.